Welcome to this week's Podcast with a K, available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boom.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corley, and joining me in this edition is Gareth Cavanagh. Hello, Gareth.
Hello, Mr. C.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, good, good, can't moan.
Excellent. Now, we've got a lot to talk about, and you're here to talk about a specific thing, which we'll get to a little bit later on, which is just to tease you, dear listener.
Oh, I'll chat about whatever you fancy. You know the score.
Absolutely. Just as a teaser, dear listener, Gareth's going to be talking to us about a bit more about the Starburst International Film Festival. But... We've just been having a brief chat offline, well online, but offline from the podcast, haven't we? About wasn't really even a chat, really. It was an interaction about this Blake 7 video game for the Spectrum.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
No, that never made it to Boots or Smiths around us.
No, same.
I don't even know. I like the look of it. But I know what would have happened. I remember buying games like that where they looked so exciting and the cover art was great. And the description will be, you know, leading Blake's fearless crew, you know, you battle injustice across the universe and seek the secret crystal of Kantor or whatever, you know. And then you get home, you load it up, it's very exciting. And then it's a square chasing another square on a sparkly backdrop. And you play it once and go, oh dear. It reminds me of what happened when I got home very excited with the Auf Wiedersehen Pet game on the Spectrum. And it was terrible.
Yeah, I don't have that memory, but I do have the Secret Diary of Adrian Mole game on the Commodore 64. I think I have a similar recollection to that.
But you got the book with it, didn't you? So that didn't feel so bad.
I remember, right.
So you didn't feel like you were getting that ripped off.
Did you? What, can you remember the first game you got with your Spectrum?
Yeah. You see, I got a Spectrum in 1984 because I originally had a Dragon 32. It's a terrible machine, but my parents bought it as because they thought it was educational and I was going to play chess and accidentally hack into the, you know, the American
NORAD
nuclear, you know, NORAD thing. Never happened. I just ended up playing chess. And terribly, actually, because I'm very impatient. My first game I bought was Jet Set Willy 2. Right. Which was so exciting. I mean, it was just absolutely thrilling. And it was that good that there was a mate of mine, Johnny Wampra, who was on the paper rounds, was that keen to play Jet Set Willy 2. He swapped me an entire C90 full of the cream of his collection. So wanted Monty Mole and all the great stuff, you know. So, and Wheelie and TLL, all these great games. So that one, Jet Set Willy 2, led to me getting lots and lots of games. It was great. I loved my Spectrum.
I still do. Great computers. Light as well. My Commodore 64, on the other hand, wasn't so light, but I got that in 1984. And the first game, I got the game with it, which was Galaxy, which was a Galaxian's clone. A very good one, I should add.
Yeah.
But the first one I bought after getting it was called just simply Ghouls, and it was an absolutely terrible game. It looked fantastic from the cover art, as they all did, as we said.
I loved the old Bread Bean Commodore. My brother had one of them. They were good.
Yeah.
Great game, great music. You know, I still have a CD of the Martin Galway music in the car, and it's nice. You know, having a nice blast of Green Beret or something like that. But no, it's you're right. I remember having a pint with one of the great ocean artists called Bob Wakelin, and he did all the iconic ocean covers. You know, you'll have seen them all. Mm-hmm. And he used to say how it would work is he'd get a call if a game was due to out. He'd occasionally get an awkward call off them, and they say, Bob, it's a bit of a turnip. Is Cosmic War Toad? We really need a particularly magic cover off you on this one. pull the stops out, make it fantastic. And, you know, I fell for it every time.
Yeah, every time. There's very few bad video game covers in those days.
They knew what sold.
Yeah, absolutely.
They knew what sold. You know, and especially where there was a license involved. I think probably the worst game I remember getting on the Spectrum was He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, which I don't know if you had.
Was that the one that goes with the movie? Was that the movie?
I think it might have been. But I don't know about you, but I remember the ritual on Christmas Day was you'd wake up dead early and then most of the presents would be games. So you'd decide what order you wanted to play them, and then you'd start the whole loading shenanigans, which youths of today won't understand. The idea that you just play this tape for, like, I don't know, about 7 minutes or 5 minutes, and it loads the game. Extraordinary.
Well, you'd look at the tape as well to see how long it was, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Give you an idea.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, give you an idea of how good it was, generally, by how, how long the tape was. Yeah. And, And I must have played Master of the Universe for no more than about 7 minutes, and it was terrible. So that went. But sometimes those games are exciting. I remember we loaded up Gauntlet on my brother's Commodore on Christmas 1986. Oh, you know, that was thrilling. We must have played that game for hours, hours and hours. Wonderful.
Did you have any of the Doctor Who games?
We had Doctor Who in the Mines of Terror, the very strange Colin Baker one, which came with the most outrageous collection of bits and manuals and secret dossiers and all sorts of rubbish.
That's another thing in those days. You'd get a load of stuff like that with games, wouldn't you? You'd get, like, posters. Well,
they were world-building, weren't they? You know, they were trying to make it. It was like a cat trying to make itself look a bit bigger, you know. So, I mean, it wasn't a bad game. And the little sprite did look a lot like Colin Baker, and it had quite nice, smooth, eight-way scrolling. And it had a strange robot cat that followed you around. And it had things that clearly were meant to be Daleks but weren't Daleks because they obviously had realised it was going to cost them a fortune to put the Daleks in, so they just made them as sort of mining robots which looked suspiciously like Daleks. So, yeah, I had that. I had a friend that had the Doctor Who, the first adventure one, you know, the one with a very nice Peter Davison cover on the BBC. And I nagged him to play that for ages. And when I finally played it, it wasn't quite as exciting as I hoped. There was like one level that I think was like Frogger. There was another level that was like a weird Star Wars thing. It was pretty pish.
In fairness, there was a lot of games in those days that were kind of aping other games, wasn't there, under sort of titles of grandeur, wasn't there? So it's not like they did anything particularly criminal.
No, and it's a lovely art. I mean, I love the art. The cover art's brilliant. You know, it's an entertaining thing, but we've got to find an educational angle with it. And I seem to remember one or two levels being slightly educational. The one I never played, which I'd love to have played, which I never saw anywhere, so it can't have come out very often. I'd like to have seen Warlord, which was that adventure game that Graham Williams wrote. And I think it was like a Keith to Time thing. I'm not sure. Because technically, that's canon, I suppose, if he wrote it and it's official.
Well, yeah.
Because, you know, an adventure story is a text thing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, text adventures were everywhere, weren't they? Because, you know, there wasn't really the point and click facility that, you know, was difficult to execute. So everything was in text adventures, wasn't it? And there's that mental. You'd have that pause before typing the exact phrase with the exact spelling into the keyboard, hoping that you didn't try it 15 tries ago.
I could only ever go. I think I never got above about 4% on The Hobbit because all I could do was go east, go west, open door, eat food. You know, that was it. You know, because it didn't tell you what the commands were. That's where point and click was better because you knew, you know, it was like trying to guess. You know, that was the problem with adventure games. I never really knew anyone that did them. To be honest, I just played them for the pictures because some of the pictures were quite nice.
Yeah, I played one game. I had a lot of trouble with adventure games, but one that I got off quite a long way through was called Sea Base Delta, which was from Firebird. I spent a lot of time. I wrote out my own map for it and everything, logged all the commands, to get through it because there's no save facility, or if there was a save facility, it was unreliable. And I got to a point I just couldn't get past this particular point. I was absolutely stuck in it. And when I typed in what I thought was going to work, the game just crashed every single time.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, there were a lot of those games were released with bugs.
Yeah.
Yes. It was a real sod that. You know, it was almost like, especially if it was a game coming out for Christmas, they'd rush out a game full of bugs. I remember Outrun being a complete mess on the Commodore because they just rushed it out. Quite nice on the Spectrum. Tasteful, you know, neat little... Always did neat little monochrome graphics quite nicely.
I think they did a better job with... was it Outrun Turbo that came out after that?
That was a bit sexier, that one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite a hard game, that, actually. They weren't meant to be played with a joystick, were they, really?
Well, I don't know. In what way?
Well, it was designed to be played with a steering wheel in the arcade, so playing...
Oh,
with
I
the
see
joystick,
what you mean, yeah.
It's never quite right, you know?
No, I wouldn't argue with that. We'll move on from retro computer game talk in a moment, but...
We have kind of just gone on, like, you know, cut the blokes down the alehouse, haven't
yeah,
we? You
totally,
know?
Yeah.
It's been much better in the olden days.
There was one game that I absolutely loved on the Commodore 64, which was Turrican, which was developed by a German guy called...
Wasn't he a sort of bloke in an armoured suit?
Yeah, that's the one, and he had, like, a wealth of weapons, and it was this parallax eight-direction scroller. An amazing
was that
thing,
like Hawkeye cool. as well? There was, I think, did they do Hawkeye as well?
They may have done. Yeah, they did do a few of them. I think there was a guy called Manfred Trentz was the lead developer. But what they did with Turrican, because the Commodore 64 had 16 colors, it had a limited 16 color palette, and what they did with Turrican, which no one had, it hadn't occurred to anyone in the previous sort of 10 years of the Commodore 64, because this is like 1991, they changed the palette. So you weren't limited to the colours that you got with the Commodore 64. They reprogrammed the palette. So you still had 16 colours, but you had
a different
16. Palette. Yeah, yeah.
And wow, that's quite clever.
It is clever, because it hadn't seemed to have occurred to anyone before that. So that was a fantastic game on all platforms. And it still went on into the... on the Mega Drive and the handhelds and versions for PC.
There was some good stuff coming out of Germany. I remember getting the great... Do you remember the great Gianna sisters?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but that was the same developers, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it had to be, because it was brilliant. And, of course, then Nintendo blew a gasket, quite rightly, going, hang on a minute. This is Super Mario Brothers. Now you're taking the mic.
Yeah.
And it disappeared off the shelves very quickly. So it is quite a sought-after rarity now. Great
well, in Germany as well, they had... Because over here, the Commodore 64 was sort of king. But in Germany, they had... the 128.
They were Atari ST men, weren't they?
Well, they did like the bigger computers. They had the Commodore 128, which was like double the size of the 64, but 64.
Oh, we never really got that over here.
Not really, no. And there was another one up from that. There was a 128 with that looked like a PC that had sort of like a desktop. You know, it had the box.
For parents with the cultural cringe that don't want to buy their kids a game machine, but you know they if they can pretend to themselves, oh yes, they'll do word processing on it, and you can do your accounts on it, Fritz. Yeah. That would be great.
Totally.
You know.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, damn that cultural fringe. That's why I ended up with a bloody with a Dragon 32, and a chess cartridge.
So,
terrible.
Yeah, retro gaming talk on the podcast with a K. We are going to move on into... I've noticed something that you've shared with me. And this is maybe part of... Well, you haven't shared it with me, you've shared it on Facebook. You've noted your interest in it. And this may be something that we talk about later on off-air, off-podcast, as it were.
Oh, yes.
But I noticed that you've expressed an interest in Davros and the Deep Space Deviants.
Oh, yes, yes.
Now, I dropped them a line after they were on BGT.
Yeah.
Inviting them onto the podcast, but I haven't heard anything back from them.
Oh, well, we'll have to ask. They're only based in Wigan. They're local.
Yeah. I could tell that by their accent.
They're local. they're doing a gig at the excellent Ruby Lounge in Manchester in September. And yeah, I mean, they've been a bit of a sort of underground sensation in the Northwest for some time. I'd never seen them because the show's always sold out so quickly. A couple of pals of mine see on Facebook saying, "Can't believe just got the last tickets for Davros," and it's like, "Eh? Is this like some youth thing?" You know, you find out that there's there's like some sparkly electro pop duos about, you know, with a combined age of 29 who are punting themselves out as Davros. But no, it's the bloke in the chair. Amazing.
Yeah. Just to break this down, to use the modern parlance, for any listeners who aren't aware of Davros and the Deep Space Deviants, they kind of came to prominence as an entry in Britain's Got Talent, UK's Britain's Got Talent this year, and surprisingly got beyond the audition
stage.
Round, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they binned them off pretty quickly.
That's true. How would you describe Davros and the Deep Space Deviants to a newcomer to their unique?
Well, it's Davros and a band doing sci-fi infused covers and all sorts of strangeness. I think it's a parody,
yes.
Which I guess is how they're able to keep the cold dead hand of Roger Hancock off them. But who knows? You know, it's bearing in mind that we've had Daleks, advertising Kit Kats and all sorts in previous years. Maybe they're up for it. Who knows?
Yeah. So are you going to that event?
Yeah, I think I'll go to that. Yeah, that looks good. It looks my cup of tea. Great venue, good fun. Yeah. So yes, I think I'll be there. So I can give you a little report on how exciting Davros is.
Yeah, you must do that. I would really like to talk to them. I think that'd be or at least Davros, yeah. I know. I think that'd be very entertaining on the podcast.
It'd be great, wouldn't it?
It's a long time since we've had a Doctor Who celebrity on the podcast with a K, if that's the right term.
Well, he's very entertaining, is for a genocidal lunatic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is our Davros. Funny enough, I was told by someone the other day that there's a cracking deleted scene from the Stolen Earth.
All right.
That shows the Davros, the Davros creation, the moment where he's fried by an atom bomb.
Oh, really?
It sounded pretty good. Yeah, apparently so. Apparently it was all filmed in corridors at the Roth Lock, you know, and Davros is reminiscing on how he's ended up being this sort of, you know, who he is. And it was all sort of piled with dead bodies and, you know, and stuff in Roth Lock in a corridor. And Davros is a scientist who's trying to convince the elders, you know, look, I can do this. I've got a solution. I can take these dead and dying and injured men. I can take them to greatness. I can bring them back as something else. I'll help us win the war. No, we're not having that. So it then goes with him going out onto a balcony, observing with binoculars on the horizon, the Scaro horizon, and there's a nuclear explosion, and he's pretty fried, and he crawls back in, you know, barely alive, and manages to get himself in a life support chamber, which is the chair, and the chair all sort of bolts round him and begins to kick in, and you hear that apparently that Dalek heartbeat sound, you know, from the control Dalek control thing. That's what I was told. It sounded a great scene. It fits, because then that's his determination to survive, and the idea that he's gonna turn dying and gravely wounded soldiers into Daleks fits,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
No, so anyway, new Davros fact out there.
Yeah, it's always good to have a new Davros fact. So, listen, you're a busy guy. Gareth Cavanna. Gareth Cavanna with a K.
One has twinges.
And before we get onto the main discussion, I noticed that you have... revised the expectations for Warp Issue 3.
Slightly. Yes.
Massage them.
But based on a good reason, We were originally hoping to get it ready for the end of August, and we've now had to slip to October. And, you know, everything's coming on nicely. I mean, we're good. 80% of the pages are locked down. I've been seeing some gorgeous stuff that Colin's putting together. So it's all wonderful. You know, and he's doing a bang-up job as editor and designer. But we were looking at... We've got two free gifts. Without saying what's on them, one of them is a CD. The other one was going to be something in a different format altogether. And originally, this other one was going to be a flexi disc. However, having looked at it, we knocked it round and Colin said, you know, flexis are fun, but, you know, how about a proper vinyl? So we've looked at it and we're upgrading the second free gift to a proper vinyl single. Blimey. Perfectly designed, all beautiful. So now the reason that it slipped back then to October is the production plant can't process them for us until October. Because they're busy pressing 100,000 copies of the Force Awakens soundtrack at the moment with a little hologram scratched in. I did ask about having a hologram on ours, and we were told a bit expensive that, you know, unless you can find a way to carve it out with a screwdriver. And I went, well, perhaps not then. So that's really it. So there's nothing sinister. It's just you guys are getting an upgrade.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, that sounds great news.
Yeah, good news, good news. And the vinyl isn't going to be with every issue. It's just going to be with one particular cover. Right. And you'll understand when you see it because it's very special. It's a very special cover and a very special free gift that we've put together. And you'll understand perfectly why it's vinyl when you see it.
Do you expect to sell many copies to people who don't have record players?
Oh, absolutely. Collector gene will click in. No one will dare ever play it, but they'll all want it as the ultimate artifact. I've become very used to this peculiarity. I'm one of the strange. I mean, I had not a row with someone, but I had a most incredulous debate because, you know, I do buy, I still buy vinyl and I buy soundtracks and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I get home and, like I used to do, I open them and I play them on my record player, and it's lovely. I flip it over and I play them, and I was told that this is absolutely what you're not supposed to do. You are supposed to keep them pristine, mint, unplayed, and download the FLAC files and play that. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, that's nuts. That's absolutely nuts. That to me, it just did not compute. But if people are happy like that, that's fine. So, which makes me think that, yeah, probably less than 1 in 10 of the records will ever be played.
It's a shame there isn't some method of playing back records that doesn't degrade the records, isn't it? Because that just would blow this whole thing open.
Yeah,
like a little laser
stylus or something. Yeah, probably a laser stylus, yeah. But
well, do you know what? I've just Googled laser needle record player, and it turns out that there is a type of phonograph, also known as an optical turntable, that uses laser beams as the pickup.
Well, there you have it.
And this has been around since the 80s. It was first postulated in 1977. Oh, there was a working prototype that got a patent in 1976. But yeah, it's been around. A physical thing's been
it's
around since
the 1980s. Time has come.
It has, isn't it?
For the anal collector.
who wants
the play experience, but is not willing to degrade the records. Still play, you know. I mean, when I used to play a lot of records back in the '80s, I mean, yeah, they used to get scratched and all sorts because I was playing that many records. The stylus would get blunt quite quickly, and when you get a blunt stylus, that's when you do have problems because it doesn't grip and it goes straight across, and it's like, oh no. Yeah. And you know, nowadays I can't say that's been a problem for some time.
Yeah, $14,000 will get you a laser turntable these days.
Someone needs to make a cheaper one.
I think they probably do. Yeah,
they do.
Yeah,
but you know, it's nice to think that that's probably what P. Diddy has in his house.
Oh, no, without a doubt, He, you know, Puff Daddy was
Yes.
He's hasn't always been called Puff Daddy.
Oh, did he have other names apart from that?
Yeah, when he was a kid, he was called Shortcrust.
Shortcrust. That's a good name. I feel that's like one of the extras from the Goonies we never met.
If only, yeah. No, it's just a very bad pastry joke. Thank you.
That's a terrible pastry joke. You had me there. Your fake facts. I thought, short crust. Interesting. Yeah, like it. Why didn't he stick with that? Better name. You know, Puff Daddy is a strange one. P. Diddy. Did he end up as P. Diddy or did he go back to being Puffy?
I have no idea. I never kept up with... I don't follow these things. Basically, if they don't play guitar, I don't follow them.
He's just seems to be sort of standing around on yachts quaffing brandy nowadays. I don't think he really qualifies as a musician, does he?
No, not really. Well, that's kind of flaky behaviour, isn't it? So
I know that Snoop Dogg likes Coronation Street. Yeah.
Snoop Dogg likes Coronation Street?
He loves Coronation Street. You look this up. I'll tell you what, when I had the pub... We got we used to get all sorts of strange emails through. And one day we got an email that had been sent out to music venues from Snoop's promoter saying Snoop is looking for gigs in the UK. What we're after is 8 grand, 2.5 grand towards airfare, and about a grand rider, you know, for him and his entourage. And I remember thinking, well, let's see. Lasagari, that could probably fit about 120 standing, you know. Would I get away with having the ultimate Snoop Dogg experience in a Manchester pub for 120 quid a ticket? Might be worth a look. And I actually got the calculator out and had a think about it. And I was that close to making an offer for Snoop to play the Lasagari because I thought... And we can let him have a little wander around Coronation Street. You know, he can hang with Rita and all that. You know, it'll be grand. oh, the crazy ideas.
Oh, why didn't this happen?
I know. Get paper and pen. There's a sitcom in this. Well, at the end, everything is possible if you do the sums and you believe you can do it.
Which I suppose brings us nicely to the Starburst International Film Festival.
I guess it does. A nice segue there.
Which you've been on before. You've talked about it when it was initially announced. And then you were back with us last month to give us some hints. Now, this week, in the week that this podcast goes out, you're releasing the itinerary, aren't you?
We're releasing the itinerary and we're releasing the day tickets, which are ridiculously good value at £25.50. And as you'd expect, because I'm looking after it, it's got some really interesting Doctor Who content in there on the Saturday in particular. So the Saturday is the family day. So that means that everything between 10 and 6 is family friendly on that day. But that doesn't mean it's boring. It just means it's family friendly. And a family ticket is only 40 quid. So two adults, two kids. Lots of Doctor Who talent. What's not to like?
Good deal.
But the highlights. So we have Bob Baker is talking about writing Wallace and Gromit and The Wrong Trousers. But of course, Bob Baker, we know as creator of K9 and Omega, wonderful writer of about 9 shows in the 70s. In the 70s, actually. I don't think he made it into the 80s. He's missed the 70s. We've got the lovely Eric Saward, Graham Harper and Philip Martin doing a little panel about season 22 Chaos. That will be fun. We've got Katie Manning with us. And we're doing something interesting with Katie this time because we're going to give her the chance to talk about and join in a live commentary, because we're doing a lot of live commentaries, on the death of the Doctor. Oh, where she came back.
Yeah.
So we're looking at her last appearance and Sarah Jane and all that over. So it's something different. You know, poor Katie has been asked, what's it like working with John Pertwee about a zillion times? No one's ever asked her what it's like working with Matt Smith. So we think that's more interesting. Now we've got two live commentaries. We're doing something that we're calling 10 at 10, which is celebrating 10 years since Tennant's first season.
Okay, yeah,
which
makes sense.
Is probably his strongest. So we're doing two live commentaries. So the first is we're doing a live commentary on School Reunion, which is a great favourite of mine. And that's going to be with Phil Collinson, who was producer for that era, writer Toby Whithouse, and Bob Baker, creator of K9. And then we're following that up with the second 10 at 10, which is a Doomsday live commentary with Phil Collinson and Graham Harper. And we may have some additional special material to showcase during that. No promises, but we may. Who else have we got? Oh, and we've got the premiere of a couple of episodes of the new Inside Number 9.
Oh, lovely.
And the Great Link there. Oh, yeah, they're going to be great. So we've got with us Graham Harper, who's directed those two episodes. Steve Pemberton, who, of course, writes and stars in them and was brilliant. One of the best things in the Silence in the Library story. You know, great bloke, great actor. And producer Adam Tandy, who's produced tons of great stuff, including the amazing Thick of It. Oh, he's going to be good. We've got lots of stuff we're doing with the BFI and a couple more treats to announce, but we've got lots of their Children's Film Foundation stuff being shown, including, do you remember the Glitter Ball?
Oh, the Glitter Ball, legendary.
Yeah, Glitter Ball we're showing, and we've got the director with us, Harley Coakless. So he's having a little chat. We've got the brilliant Glitch in Time, which is basically a missing Doctor Who story with Patrick Troughton more or less playing the Doctor. And most intriguing of all, I think, we've got Christopher Priest with us, who is talking about adapting The Prestige for the big screen, but was a near miss, as of course very well thought of sci-fi writer, was a near miss with scripting the legendary, near legendary Sealed Orders story, which was supposed to be part of the climax of season 18 and would have seen the Doctor and Romana summoned back to Gallifrey to face a great cataclysm and would have brought Leela back.
Right.
So lots to chat about, lots of goodies, so lots of Doctor Who goodies and lots of other goodies as well. So we've got the new Thunderbirds, 1965. We've got those episodes on the big screen.
Oh, no, those
we've
are the ones that they've adapted from the radio.
From
right?
the records. Yeah, the records, from the original vinyl records, you see. Get your laser needle out.
Yes.
So we've got those on the big screen, and we've got the producer, Stephen LaRiviere, with us, and the lovely David Graham as the voice of Brains and Parker. And as I like to think of him, the original Dalek voice.
You should get him, ask him to be the wise old elf. His wise old elf voice is fantastic.
And I'm told that his grandpa Peppa Pig is pretty good as well.
It's pretty much the same voice.
Is it?
Yes.
Is it sort of wise and croaky, is it?
Yes, it is, yes. But he's
yeah.
There's Ben. Everyone. Is his parent talk? Okay, so apologies anyone who isn't a parent. It's going to get bored by this. Indeed, you too, Gareth. Peppa Pig gets all the plaudits, but actually, Ben and Holly's Little Kingdom is by far the funnier programme.
Okay, well, what's give me the elevator pitch then?
It's basically a boy who's an elf, a girl who's a fairy, and they have adventures. And every adventure is interjected with an appearance by the wise old elf and Nanny Plum, and they have a bit of a they argue all the time. And the humour in it is very dry. It's so very good. It's very funny. You'd be difficult.
Sounds good.
You'd be troubled to get through it without laughing. And it
does get all the kudos, as you say, but it always looks, you know, from the outside, it always looks very, very domestic, you know?
Oh, it is, yeah. No, but Ben, you know, Ben and Holly every... is where it's at.
Good man. Get that in the show notes. Is there any good stuff on BBC nowadays? You know, joking aside.
Well, those are Channel 5 shows. On CBeebies at the moment, what have we got? There's there's always the occasional repeats of Old Jack's Boat with Bernard Cribbins, which Russell T Davies wrote a few of.
The Cribster. Yeah. Always
Martha. Martha's
is that
in...
good?
Yeah, it's very good. Freema Agyeman's in some of them, and so is Don Gillet. He's in some of them. Is it Gillet or Gillette? He's in some of them.
It could be Gillet. I don't know.
I don't know either, yeah. So they're good, and they get repeated from time to time. There's Grandpa in My Pocket with James Bolan, which is very good.
Oh, he's been coining it in that for years, isn't he?
Hasn't
It's
he
the
just,
ultimate retirement package for him.
He won't let us watch
the Likely Lads anymore. But you know, he's with that grandpa in your pocket gig.
But probably the best in terms of storytelling for children at the moment is a program called Teacup Travels.
Good name.
Yeah, Gemma Jones narrates, but she's also a character in it, who then narrates the story with one of her niece or nephew as the main character. And that's written by lots of different prominent people, prominent children's writers and stuff. Our friend Dean Wilkinson, he's been on the podcast, not on the podcast with a K, he's been on the Cultcast, and he's a personal friend of mine from the Northeast. He used to write for Ant and Dec. He's pretty much one of the reasons why Ant and Dec is still famous.
Oh, good luck. The hand behind the throne.
Yeah, yeah. And he writes video games. He did the Sackboy guy, who's at Little Big Planet, and the most recent Worms games.
Oh, I loved Sackboy years ago. He was great.
Yeah, he's pretty prolific in the video game arena.
Yeah.
He's written some of those as well. Yeah, so...
Do you ever unleash some old stuff on the kids? You know, do you ever go, come on, have a little bit of Dr. Snuggles, kids? Or
They like Scooby-Doo, the classic Scooby-Doos. Yeah. They're popular.
I tried
Superman the movie last night, but didn't get too well with that. Once we get to
it's a very director's film.
Well, we get to the director's cut as well, so we had to sit through the Krypton stuff at the beginning with the... with Zod, etc., which I don't think is in the second version, is it? That's in the director's cut.
No, that is in the pictures, that.
Is it right? I could never remember.
Yeah, Superman 2, I mean, it's... You get lovely Marlon Brando stuff, you know.
Yeah, but you've got the whole, you know, the can you read my mind bit. I mean, that just sends children to sleep.
It does have pacing problems, that original Superman.
Yeah.
It really does. It does seem to go on forever. Yeah. Superman 2 is the better of them.
One other thing that they have attempted is the Mr. Men, original Mr. Men.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nice.
Because there's two Mr. Men. There's the original ones, which you all remember, with narrated by Arthur Lowe.
It's very scary and highly immoral, you know.
Yeah. And then there's the more recent ones, which are... There's an American version and a British version. The British version is basically the same.
An American version of the Mr. Men? That is outrageous.
The modern Mr. Men, it's quite common in children's TV. Well, the British version of the updated one is Simon Callow.
Nice. Yeah,
I'm not sure
nice.
Who the American one is, but they share voices. And it's a little bit troubling. Say, in the UK version, Mr. Messi has a Scouse accent.
I can see that upsetting a few people. One in particular.
Yeah. So that's.
But it does kind of fit, doesn't it? Well, you know, for us older people, it's Freddie Boswell, isn't it? It's Mr. Messi.
Yeah.
You know, he's even got the hair.
There's lots of good kids stuff around at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh well, that's reassuring, man. That's good. That's really good. So you don't get a bit of bagpuss out on them, or bit of Trump?
No, they've had bagpuss. They didn't like Trumpton or any of those, but they did like bagpuss.
Yeah. Trumpton's a funny one, really, isn't it? The class system is basically there in the whole thing, you know. Hmm. You've got Trumpton as a metropolis. You've got Camberwick Green as the slightly smug, you know, stockbroker belt little village. And then you've got, you know, a biscuit factory full of commoners, you know. Yep. Do you remember Chigley?
Yeah, we... No, I don't. I know of it, but I don't remember ever seeing it.
No. Well, it's it definitely was there. It's difficult to have because there's even like a Lord of the Manor who drives his own train and has got a servant, and there's like a biscuit factory. It's it's something else. It's the sort of thing that would make Jeremy Corbyn very angry.
Speaking of biscuit factories, okay.
Mm.
There must be 10, 12 episodes of Bagpuss. I don't know. Every time I've ever seen Bagpuss. You know, since being a child, the only episode I ever see is the one with the chocolate digestive biscuit factory.
That's because it's a masterpiece.
It must be, mustn't it?
That's because it's a masterpiece. you know, that's where the mice get one over Yaffle. by inventing this amazing machine, as you remember, where
Yeah.
you know they put in butter beans and breadcrumbs,
Yeah.
turn a handle, forgot the lights come on, and a magic chocolate digestive pops out the bottom, which is of course you know the very essence of an economic miracle. But sadly, no, it's Yaffle, having marvelled at this and scratching his head and unable to work it out, then twigs the mice are just recycling the same chocolate biscuit, round and round. you know, I'll bet when they all went to sleep, Yaffle went away and chiselled a few big holes in that mouse organ in vast outrage.
Vindictive swine.
He does not like being made a fool of. No, Bad Puss, wonderful. Still a class act. An absolute class act.
And, of course, The Clangers, which was redone with Michael Palin.
Oh, yeah. And I was slightly less outraged that they'd done an American version. You know, it just felt a bit like cultural appropriation. Except when they have... Shatner doing the voice, and then you think, well, okay, it's Shatner. You know, that's less of a cultural appropriation
I
issue.
Didn't know that. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, Shatner does the voices, the American one.
Right, I'm going to have to look for that. That sounds fantastic.
Treat yourself.
Okay, so Gareth Cavanagh, join us for an entire podcast with a K. So I'm going to give you and the listener a little bit.
Are you
bit
Googling
of
it as we speak?
not quite, but I might be after we're finished. But as I've got you, and we've got a few moments left of the podcast, I'm going to give you a little bit of a hint of what we've been recording, James and Brian and myself. Okay. And I'm going to gauge your interest and give you and everyone an idea of what's coming up and gauge your interest so we can decide which one I'm going to run first, okay? So we've recently done a commentary on Rose. Now, that went out last week.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice. Much underrated. Much underrated.
Indeed.
The most important episode of Doctor Who since the first one.
Certainly. And we've also done the other most important episode of Doctor Who since the first one. Well, not an episode, four episodes. Spearhead from Space.
Yeah. Less keen on that one, if I'm being honest. Just seems to go nowhere, but it does look nice.
It looks even nicer now on Blu-ray.
Yeah, it scrubbed up quite nicely, that one. Hmm. I'm mostly genuinely hugely irritated by the Doctor's escape in the wheelchair and the comedy music that goes with it. It just makes me want to put something through the screen at that point.
Yes. I had not quite as violent misgivings about that scene, but all will be revealed in future podcasts over the next few weeks. And we're also recording another one tonight. Now, at the moment, we're a little bit unsure as to what we're going to do because we've got an hour window. We're kind of toying with the idea of doing Love and Monsters or another less popular New Who 1 hour.
Ooh.
Doctor Who, you know. So at the moment, we're not entirely sure which one we're going to do. I mean, would you give any advice? Would you make a suggestion
that
we can maybe digest?
Something that's a little bit misunderstood, perhaps. That's a trickier one, that.
I was thinking perhaps Fear Her or Night Terrors as well. They were alternatives.
Yeah. I tell you what I think is a bit misunderstood. I think that Gridlock is most definitely underrated.
Mm-hmm.
He's most definitely underrated because actually, you know, people get a little bit fixated about the Macra, and the Macra are just, you know, they could be anything down there.
Yes,
they could be cleaning robots on the rampage. You know, the fact they're Macra just kind of people get obsessed with that. But that's a very, very clever treatise on the power of faith. And I was discussing this with someone, with Tom Spilsby's father, who's a vicar.
Okay.
And we were talking about that, and I was saying how it's interesting that Russell T. Davies is an avowed atheist, but seems to write about faith an awful lot
mm-hmm.
for an atheist. And I think that when they're all singing the old rugged cross, he has to admit that, yeah, Gallifrey's gone, you never see it. I'd recommend that.
Okay, maybe we'll consider that. And we'll certainly do it at some point because I do like the suggestion of gridlock. I do actually like gridlock a lot. I do think you're right. It does people do tend to focus on the macro and the cat people as well, but there is a lot going on there. And as well as being a treatise on faith, I would also say it's a treatise on faith in a system as well, not necessarily a
Yes.
church, but also a social system.
Yeah, that if they all pull together, they'll be all right. That's in the cat people and the macro, which are the baubles, really.
Yeah, pretty much so, pretty much so. Okay.
They're not the tree, they're the baubles. So yeah, that would be my suggestion.
Okay, we will maybe consider that.
It's also the most 2000 AD of all the new Who's that were ever made.
Oh, do you
I just
think
wanted to
2000? No, I always
add it.
felt it was more. I always felt it was more the DWM comic rather than 2000 AD.
No, I'll tell you why I think that is because the guy with the bowler hat, he always
Yes.
reminds me of Max Normal.
Right, okay.
And the idea that all the characters in the ecosystem reminds me of the guys in 2000 AD, who haven't got homes but just drive around in the automated cars all the time.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough, yeah.
Okay, yeah, sorry, I digress.
No, that's quite all right. Digress at your leisure on the podcast with a K. But that does bring us to the end of this week's podcast, and we'll be back next week with myself, James, and Brian, and the commentary.
Yeah, you get the 18 back
Is the
next
18
week.
back? Yes.
Yeah.
But
I'll be back. I'll be back, hoovering Unit HQ.
many thanks to Gareth Cavanagh and for his insight into both of WPG3 and what's coming up with the Starburst International Film Festival, which is pretty much the highlight of this podcast. Thank you, Gareth.
Yeah, so don't forget, grab your tickets.
Grab your tickets, and Family Day is on the Saturday, and the
Yep.
event runs from the 26th until the 28th of August.
Correct.
And you can find out more at starburstfilmfest.co.uk. The event is at Manchester at the Union on 21 Higher Cambridge Street at Manchester
Correct.
Met University.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Gareth, and until next time, dear listener, goodbye.